there, green future growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like the other green future growers. Well, the Organic Gardener podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get listening to your first audiobook today. Welcome to the Organic Gardener podcast this morning. I am just thrilled to introduce my featured guest today, Oma Garden, because I had a listener ask me about gardening in Texas because she was down there and had some questions about gardening in, I think it's 9B or is where she was in that zone.
Zone 9.
And so I reached out to some gardeners I found in Texas on Facebook, and Oma's here to tell us. She said, yes, I will come on. And we've had some trouble connecting, kind of, or getting our schedules in sync. So it's early morning, and it's so funny because she's actually in my hometown on a trip today. I was just like, what? Really? That's so funny. So anyway, I will let her talk and tell you. She's got a great Facebook page. And so to tell us a little bit about gardening down in the South, where it's a lot different than where I am up here in Montana, is Oma Garden. So welcome to the show, Oma.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm just so excited because I can help a listener and I get to meet somebody new. And there you are. I got to hook you up with my mom today if I can. So go ahead and tell listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, I live in the North Central Texas area. I have three children and two grandchildren, which is why I'm Oma, of course. Everybody calls me that, at least from my kids' side. That was my daughter's idea, and I thought it was a little ridiculous at first until I heard my grandkids call me that, and then that was it. That's what I am. So, I've been married 30 years, and of course I love gardening like so many others out there. I'm at a point in my life where I just want to enjoy some of the more natural things in the world, and you can't get much more natural than organic gardening. I mean, it's one of those things that can be, right, simultaneously satisfying and frustrating at the same time. It's kind of like you against the forces, and when you can overcome them and actually win or come up with that great crop that you worked hard, there's really nothing more satisfying than being able to see what you've built and what you've grown and worked at. So that's me. I'm Oma Garden.
Well, that's so true. We are having like one of the toughest garden years. Like, my husband planted this mini farm this year and there's all this stuff growing and I've never seen it be such a challenge. The squirrels are climbing on my broccoli and pooping right on my broccoli. I'm just devastated. I'm like, seriously? And they take like two bites and move on to the next one. I'm like, ugh. I've never seen anything so crazy on top of all the other challenges. So well said, for sure, when you actually overcome and get some good produce out of there. So, Oma, I do always kind of start the show asking about like your very first gardening experience. You know, like, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Would you grow? Like, how did you start gardening?
Oh, wow. Like probably a lot of people my age, my great-grandparents were the first exposure that I had to grant to gardening. They lived in Abilene, Texas, and they would sell their vegetables on the roadside off the main freeway there, I-20, that runs through the town. They only had 2 acres, but it was full. I mean, just full of everything you could think of. And they had this big tree right off the back of the house, and it ran along the watermelon patch. And I can just remember other daddy grabbing it and saying, darling, those melons are about to fall right off the vine. I mean, grab one right off the field and place it right on the table right there for all of us kids to get into. And that kind of stuck with me. That was family, or just the view of that, having that. So probably, though, I was about 18, 19 when I started experimenting with gardening, wanting to do that. And you have this vision of that beautiful field out there in your mind. And of course, everything I grew burned that year because I did everything wrong. I threw it all in the east side where the sun hits it all day long. And if you're in zone 8 or zone 9, like your listener, you learn really quick that full sun doesn't necessarily mean the same thing in Texas. Full sun in Texas can fry a plant. And all the things I had planted out there didn't turn out very well. So you kind of have to learn what really works. And, you know, that was my first take on the north, south, east, and west sides of your home and where you actually want to put things when it comes to gardening. But lucky for me, that didn't deter me. It just made me a little more wanting to figure out what it was that I'd done that took such the wrong turn there so quickly. And I just kept going. And that's what a lot of people have to do. You have to just, you learn from what you try and fail at.
Aw, I want to make a children's book about you. I can totally envision the picture of the kids and the watermelon plant and this big tree by your house and just, oh, this is wonderful. So then how did you learn how to garden organically? Was it from your great-grandparents? Did they do it that way? Or was it something that you learned along the line when you started gardening? Or?
You know, I use the tier method, trial, error, and research. A lot. As I told you there, you know, the first time, my first attempt out the gate, I kind of burned things pretty badly. But a lot from my family as well, watching my grandmother use things in like baking soda in her garden and fruit and orange peels around her plants. And, you know, they didn't really call it organic back right. then. They just threw certain things in the whole bed and let the dirt take care of them. They didn't necessarily think that it was anything special, but I did learn a lot just from being around them and watching, you know, other mother, daddies, what we called them, out in the field with their plants. They would put rows in between and just throw their peels in it and cover it up and let the dirt do its job in between the plants. And the tea bags, even those types, coffee grinds, you name it, they would put that in the dirt. The other thing, though, is research. There's just so many things that you can learn nowadays that you have access to that we really didn't when I was younger, without actually going to a library or buying a book, right, or purchasing a magazine. You didn't have at your fingertips sites like this or things that you could just learn from. Some of the other things, though, it's just not being afraid to try things. I remember the first time I ever put some of my vegetables around my flowers. We were living out in San Angelo, which is a lot drier, hotter area than North Central Texas, where I am right now. And I didn't have a lot of space. And I remember seeing these pictures of beautiful rainbow chard. This was about 2 decades ago. And I just thought, oh, that would look so pretty with my cannas. And I just threw them in the same bed. And what I didn't realize at the time is that that's companion planting in a sense, right? The flowers bring the bees and the pollinators to your garden, and the colors are there. And it's just, it's always exciting to see what you can combine and plant together in order to make the beauty of your space seem more inviting and appealing to those that walk through it. Because gardening is a lot of the senses too, right? It's not just about eating your food. It's what you see and smell and taste all together. So it's the joy of that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of my guests have talked about their favorite thing to do in the garden is to go walk down there. And I'm sure we all feel that way. It's just hanging out in such a lovely, beautiful place. And many guests have talked about, like, they don't even grow vegetables. It's just their, you know, their landscape or where they are. So... for sure. What? How funny though. I love chard. Rainbow chard is especially delicious. I love the red.
It's a beautiful plant,
isn't it? And it
is.
What I love about it is, you know, I've been talking a lot this summer. Is you know, it lasts so much better. You know, my lettuce is all bolted, long gone. My spinach has been gone forever, and I can do anything. I even sent some home with my stepdaughter last night. She was making hamburgers and she's like, you don't have any lettuce? And I was like, no, but here, put Swiss chard. I was like, if you're just, you know, it's perfect on burgers and sandwiches and things.
Absolutely.
She was so excited, went home with this big basket full of fresh garden veggies last night. So Oma, tell us about something that grew well this year. What's something that's going good down there in Texas?
You know, I actually had a really good year. The best thing, though, I think that's really taken off is my sweet potatoes. They are just nuts. They are everywhere. The vines are really thick, and I can already see the potatoes coming up. Of course, I won't be able to enjoy those for about another 2 or 3 weeks. The other thing is cucumbers. Cucumbers love the Texas heat. The the heat in our area, the cucumbers seem to thrive there. The zucchini did really well, but I fought the squash bugs hard this year. I have not seen them like they have been. I'm sure it has to do with the change in our weather and our temperatures in places, but we had a really light winter, so the squash bugs were kind of everywhere. I was able though to get a really good batch of zucchini out that lasts me, and my freezer's pretty full, so you can count that as a success, even though ultimately you had to tear those suckers down at some point. So I think it's really been an unusual year with all of the rain here in Texas, and we had a longer than normal spring period. We normally start to get up in the 90s and Lord help us, right, the hundreds by June, and through June and July, we were still enjoying the high 80s and some good rain. So our spring worked really well this year. So I think if you're going to grow in the southern states, the things that you probably want to stick with is your potatoes, your tomatoes, your cucumbers, those types of things that really like our heat.
What do you do to deal with your bugs and your squash plants?
Well, like I said, the squash vine borers, they've been out in masses this year. You can hear that, too, from other people that are growing their pumpkins and their squash and things like that out there. Neem oil works well if you get them, if you stay at it while they're young, if you try to keep your plants coated on the base of them towards the point where they go into the ground, if you try to keep that neem oil on there before the larvae comes out and crawls into the plant itself, because once it eats that hole, it's eating that neem oil, and that'll get them. You can also spray it actually inside where the hole is inside the plant. It'll fill up because the pumpkins and the squash, they're hollow in the center of them, so you can spray that inside it, and it does a pretty good job of knocking them out while they're eating in there as well. If you miss that window, though, it starts to get tough. Diatomaceous earth is good for your squash bugs while they're small. Again, it's trying to catch them before they get into a full-grown beetle-like bug. And once they get to that point, though, they're hard, really hard to get rid of without using some kind of insecticide. And this is the first year I've fully tried to go 100% organic. No insecticide that's not naturally derived. So it's a challenge. You gotta stay on them, but you can have success, and you just kind of have to think like a bug. Get down there at the base of your plants, see what's going on.
I love that. Think like a bug, get down there and look inside. And what a great place to hang out, right? I love looking under those squash vines. I've taken so many pictures because I keep thinking I'm going to do a children's book like that from like the insect's point of view and looking up.
Yeah.
So how about, is there something you're going to do? You're like excited to try new next year, something different you're going to do?
I want to try BT, I guess, for the squash as well. That's another thing that I've read a lot about recently, that you can use to try to deter your squash bugs. I do a lot of vertical growing with my cantaloupe, but I think over the last 3 to 4 years, I've realized that you can do that and it works really well. But sometimes it's better just let it sprawl. So I think I'm going to try to find a place for it next year and let it sprawl a little more around the plants. I didn't get my okra in the ground as soon as I should have this year. I got a little more focused on the corn and things that were growing out there. It's still doing well, but I want to try to make sure and get that in a little earlier so that I can get a spring and a fall crop from the okra side.
Now, how big is your place?
You know, I don't have a big spot. I have a quarter acre, and I would love to have much more land than that. How many gardeners wouldn't like to have more land? You never have enough. You never have enough land. But I've got about a quarter acre, so you use every bit of space that you can. I mean, that's the thing. You want to make sure that you use the spots that you don't think. I've even got pumpkins growing behind a shed where you think that maybe something can't grow there, but if it gets in Texas or in those zones that have that heat, you can actually take spots that maybe get sun at the very middle of the day between the hours of 11 and 4 and get plenty of sun, and they're actually better off for it if they're shaded by the building in the evenings or in the, you know, in the mornings from that time frame there. And you can get quite a bit of good plants just by thinking through where you pot your stuff. But space, right? Using your space wisely, combining your plants together, making sure that you can get what you want in a tight area. It's not any different than those pictures you see, right, on people who live in big cities and have all these wonderful container gardens all over their patio. It's the same concept. Just push it into your yard. Try to use every corner.
Yep. I always think of, like, when I think of, like, how small my house is, I think of my aunt living in an apartment in New York City. And I'm like, well, she did it in that little apartment, so I can do it here, you know. And I'm sure she pays a fortune for her fancy apartment in New York City. So, definitely. And certainly you never have enough space. Mike's always talking about, I need more space. I need more space.
There's so always more dirt.
Tell us about something that didn't work so well this season. Is there something that didn't come out the way you thought it was going to? And maybe it's the squash plants.
Yeah, you know, I think that my cantaloupes, and you mentioned it earlier, the animals seem worse this year. It seemed like I could not get a cantaloupe off a vine without something eating it. And I tried a couple different methods. I think one of the failure points that I did, though, is I put them right beside the fence. So I was basically just asking them, hey, here's a little ladder for you. Come on over. And then I made them vertical. Then I made them vertical on top of that, right? So let me step them up a few feet for you. let me make it there.
What I was curious about the vertical thing is, like, aren't cantaloupes a heavy thing? Like, what did they, like,
they,
how does that
they
work?
Are. Yeah, they are, but they will grow well vertically. You can put them on tomato cages and lace a bunch of rope through the cages so that it almost makes like baskets in between the layers, and they'll sit right there and grow.
I talked to a girl here in Montana who talked about putting, I can't remember how it went, but like something about like making these little stocking baskets out of like old used pairs of women's stockings and hanging them on this fence to hold the little, like making a little fruit basket type of thing.
Yes. Yes. I've seen that. I've also seen people use that for their cucumbers. You can take and hang women's stockings between your wooden, we have a lot of wooden fences in Texas. They frame most of the houses. You can hang them in between the slats and they'll grow right up the side of them. I actually have not tried that, but one of my neighbors did that on a regular basis. I use rope that I wrap through, same concept on there. But the thing is, you can use things like that, and they will definitely grow. So, ladies, don't have a lot of money. Just take your holy stockings and throw them on your fence. You can most definitely use them as a vining growth, and it will hold. It will hold your plants and stuff in them as well.
That's cute. Okay. Before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. Do you want to improve your soil fertility? Would you like to learn more about cover crops? Does growing your own fertilizer sound good to you? Have you been hearing about green manure but aren't sure where to start? If you'd like to join me in a study group where we go through Anna Hess's amazing primer, Homegrown Humus, Cover Crops in a No-Till Garden, then join our study group this fall. The cost for the beta version would just be $10 and includes a copy of the book along with free shipping. So I've got some tentative dates. Know I love lesson plans. So reach out to me on the Organic Gardener Podcast Homegrown Humus Study Group page, or you know, you can email me at orgpodcast@gmail.com or just go to the contact page. But if you would like to learn more and sign up for the beta group, let me know. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audio book? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like the other Green Future growers. Well, the Organic Gardener podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get listening to your first audiobook today. Well, we're already ready to get to the root of things. Tell us, what's your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there something you have to force yourself to get out there and do?
Oh, you know, I'm sure everybody hates weeding. It's one of the things that's like the evil of the garden is keeping the weeds out. So I think what you want to do is make sure that you plant things in a way that keeps your weeding down. If you can combine your plants, it's a perfect balance, right? How closely together can I put them so that the weeds can't get to the sun? Because if they can find that sun, they're gonna reach out and grow. There's just no doubt about it. So how close can I put them that's not so close that they can't get the air and oxygen that they need around them? So I try to throw. If you look at my site, you'll often see my plants are fairly close together, but there's still room to walk in between them or air in between them, but they come out across and kind of connect together to where the sun can't get down below the base of them, which keeps the weeds down. So I honestly don't have to do that a whole bunch. You can also do things like throw your sweet potatoes around your flower beds and let them grow, and they will literally make a barrier of weed protection all along the base because they can't get through those vines, and your flowers and everything will still grow up around them. And it's quite a beautiful way to use those. Of course, the Three Sisters gardens, right? The Indians knew what they were doing. They would throw their pumpkins and squash at the base of their corn to keep the weeds out and let that grow around those items like that, using their corn as their bean poles so that they don't have to buy as many or, you know, have as many poles that they make out there themselves to put it through. So it's using your space in a way that makes sure you don't have to do that thing you don't like that often, which is weeding. And I guess if that's the worst of it all, even that you can even find your own joy in that at times. If you just need to get away, go pull a few weeds as you walk through the yard, but try to make sure that you're planting your items in a way that it promotes less weeds coming in into your space.
And you know, Jean Martin Fortier, the famous market farmer up in Canada, I've just been like perusing through his book again. I've been thinking about doing these garden courses, and he talks a lot about biointensive farming, and that's exactly it, where your plants are just close enough, they have room to grow, but they're touching. I think he says like when your plant is 3/4 of the way grown is where their leaves should be touching so that you don't get that weed problem. That's exactly what he's talking about. The weeds, like, it makes like this canopy somehow where the leaves are touching, and that's so you could get the most amount of food within the size of the beds that you're using and things. And then, like you said, they're covering so the weeds don't grow and making a little, I don't know, biointensive climate, microclimate, yeah, or something down there.
Yeah, it suppresses them because weeds are pretty smart. You almost have to hand it to them because they'll find that patch of light. They'll find that patch of light. They could almost be an algorithm for life, right? Nothing's going to hold me down. I'm going to find that piece of sun. But it's always beautiful too when you can plant them together like that, where they're just close enough that everything is lush and hidden but still breathable, so you don't have that disease problem coming in there. So that's I think the best thing to try to keep that hateful task down.
Yeah. And then Mike, this is the first year he's really done that Three Sisters thing, and it's so cool because you can see the green beans are climbing up around the corn, and the squash is down there on the bottom and going around the outside of his big corn bed, and it's really
beautiful.
Neat to see it working together that way.
Mm-hmm. Correct. It's beautiful. It's companion planting at its finest, I think.
Yeah. So then on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Oh, you know, probably designing the new bed every year, every spring and every fall. it's like starting with a new canvas, right? When you you're kind of sad when you when your August and July and August month come in and your plants are starting to die and the sun is hot, but at the same time it's like a rebirth of what can I clean out and what can I put there and where is it going to go the next year? Because you need to rotate your, if at all possible, even if you have small spaces, you should try to rotate your plants as often as you can. That was probably one of the things I didn't do very well this year. I put my cantaloupe, I have problems with cantaloupe this year. I either had unwanted animals eating it, or I put it in the same spot for 2 years. Sometimes you get lazy, right? It just looks so nice there. Put it right back in that same spot in the bug.
And it just works.
Exactly,
it seems like that's a natural place for it, right?
Correct. It just fits. It's got a nice little little area there where it fits in. But I really got hit hard
on
with the aphids.
Like,
exactly.
I always find where we put our peas, like, you know, I was going to go by, where's their trellis? You know, where's their fence that goes up? There's only so many spaces in our yard where there's something the peas can climb.
Correct. So I just think it's exciting to redesign, to think where you can move your things. Because if you don't move them, it never fails. You try to put them back in the same spot, and it's like rolling the dice. Some years it's great, and other years it's like, oh, that bug's knew exactly where to find my plants. They were there last year. It came back to the buffet, the buffet area. So
that's a good point.
I never
thought about it that way, that the bugs know where to go because if you're putting it
in the same
spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And they do. Now, truth is, they're going to find them anywhere. It's one of the reasons for rotating, right? They've got a sense of smell that's unheard of. But you try to keep them guessing, you know, where did they move their stuff this year? Because they will definitely come back. The nematoids will be right there in the soil where you left your plants the last year if you're not careful. So it's rotating that, and that aspect of it is fun too, just designing it, seeing what it's going to look like, what you're going to pair. And it makes your yard change, right? You see it 1 year and it's beautiful and you're thinking it's great, but what if you move those sunflowers over to this corner this year and put the corn over there with it, or move your marigolds to a little bit different spot, or try squash behind another area because maybe the flies won't find them so quick. So it's that rebirth of discovering something new and different with your garden every season. And it never stops changing.
I love that. You know, I don't know that anybody said anything like that, like designing their thing. Although I know Megan King talks a lot about, you know, being strategic and doing a lot of garden planning. And she actually talks about some of the most fun is in the winter when you're home and nestled up with your catalogs and designing your thing. But you're the first one that's really mentioned, like, thinking about it in the fall as you're cleaning up and thinking about where things are going. I know I've been out there in my garden a lot looking about, like, where I want to spread some irises out because they're just getting too full on the beds. And where am I going to put those irises? And where can I move some things? Lisa Ziegler does talk a lot about planting, she calls them cool annuals, and planting some of your annuals ahead so that they just come up, putting them in the fall so they're ready to bloom in the spring. So I guess some people have, but I really like the way you're describing it. So,
you know, the other thing is it's thinking about your perennials versus your annuals, because you mentioned that's, you know, a good point with the annuals there. You can move those. So it's, where are you going to plant those plants that don't ever change? And then how are you going to move things around them? So it is a design process. And you're exactly right with what she said. I mean, I have a chair, right? And next to my chair is my basket. And in my basket is my magazines. And I will sit there and go through and think, oh, let's try this chair. Let's move this around. So it is a design concept. Take your paper out and put it down and put your plants next to each other and think in your mind where it's going to look the next season.
See, and I am totally not like that. Like, I have a journal and I write everything in it, but I always write my garden journal after we plant it, or like down there, like the day we put the seeds in. But I never plan anything ahead of time. I'm not very good at that part.
Well, that's probably the project manager in me coming out.
Oh, could be. I definitely go through the catalogs and order way too many seeds, or stand in the store and get too many seeds. Like, I definitely do that part. But as far as like planning, like, this is going to go here and this is going to go there, I haven't quite got there yet. but you never know. So, Oma, what's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
Oh, you know, it has to be, it's all about balance. You know, don't get so overwhelmed with it being perfect that you forget that a little bit of bug is not a bad thing. There's beneficial insects out there and there's non-beneficial insects, but you've got to have that balance. The ladybugs come after the aphids and the other insects, the wasps and things that eat your bad insects, they, although they're a little scary sometimes, they're around for a reason. So a sign of a good garden is when you have a little bit of a balance out there, when you can see your ladybugs or your lacewings and your other insects that are good for your garden. If you can see them, then you know that they're, it's healthy and it's happy. I remember, you know, soap and water is an amazing thing that you can use for your plants. It's such a common organic method. You can just wash, and it's almost funny that you think about the fact that you're just washing your plants, right? You're just washing them with a little soap and water. But about a decade ago, I was fighting aphids, and I was out every 3 days just really kind of freaking out on them because I could not get rid of them. And I had someone tell me, you know, just maybe just leave it alone for a few days, because your soap and water can also hurt your ladybugs if you're not careful, you know, with using it. It dries out their coat just like it does some of the other insects and that you're trying to get rid of. And I just relax a little bit and just see if maybe you've got a balance problem out there. So I just kind of step back and look at it. And within within the next week, I swear there was a buffet. There was a buffet going on in my yard. I think I had every ladybug in the neighborhood on my plants. I had never seen so many ladybugs on my plants, but they were doing their job. And I kind of learned from that it's, you know, sometimes don't let yourself stress out so much that you forget that nature does have a point in itself at times.
You know, that's so true. And I have heard several people like have told me, they've complained, oh, we got the ladybugs and they just disappeared right away. And I've kind of heard that, like, well, that's a good sign. That means they did their job and they moved on, and that should have got rid of your aphid problem. And they just...
Correct.
So I love that. Keep a balance. And that's so funny. All the lady. Oh, my gosh. I'm coming up with so many children's book images just talking to you. This is so fun. How about a favorite tool, Oma? If you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
Oh, my gosh. I have a pickaxe. The most ugliest rugged piece of tool that I've had, I think, since I was 19 years old. And that's been a long time because I'm an Oma now. So that's been a while. And I have had that pickaxe. And it back when, you know, we all have our macaroni days, right? We all go through those days where you can only afford a bag of 20 macaroni and you're still wanting to garden, and, you know, a dollar bag of seeds, that's all you got. And I have this one pickaxe, and I would use that to weed. I would use that to plow the earth. I would use that to, you know, put up a new bed. That's the only tool. I was a little bit rich when I was able to get a good pair of shears and clippers and all these other things. But if I had to choose one tool, I'd go back to that wooden handle, pointy on one like on the other pickaxe that I can do with anything, because I can clean any bed with that one tool.
Cool. Well, I hope we can find a picture of that we can put in the show notes.
It's pretty old at this point. Aww. It's almost antique looking.
You must take good care of it, though.
I don't even know if I do that, honestly. I probably left it out in the rain. It's just honestly that one thing that's always been there. I told Opa the other day, it's actually been about a month ago, I told him, I said, is that thing ever, it's going to break one of these days, and then what am I going to do? You're going to have to go find me another.
How about a favorite recipe? Like, what do you love to cook from the garden?
Oh, gosh. I love using the tomatillas. You know, I didn't even think about that. My tomatillas rocked this year. They were just amazing. I'm still getting them, even through the summer heat. I've still gotten probably dozens of tomatillas, and it's probably the first year that I've had that good of a result. I think, you know, back to that rotation, I think I put them in the perfect spot, and I'll be tempted to stick them there again next year, but I won't. I'll move them. But man, they just worked you know, just worked. So there's nothing as good as taking like your tomatillas and your tomatoes and your peppers and roasting those over your grill and using them to garnish your things, or just good green salsas with your jalapenos. There's just nothing like the taste of that fresh off the vine vegetables, right? Even in their raw form.
No, absolutely. We've just been dying this year over. Mike planted golden beets for the first time, and I call them like golden beet lollipops. They're so good.
I have not tried those. I will have to see what are they, a gold color, literally?
Oh my gosh, like they are so gold on the inside. They're kind of an orangey, pinkish color on the outside, the skin type. But on the inside, they are this yellow gold color, and they are just so delightful. I don't need to put anything on them. I just pop them in my mouth like candy. I do cook them. I mean, I boil them. But
oh, they sound beautiful, though.
Yeah. How about a favorite internet resource? Is there anywhere you like to go on the web to find information about gardening?
Yeah, you know, I really like the Home Guides SF Gate stuff. They're short and to the point. You can often see them if you search for something. You can see homeguides.sfgate.com. They've got a gardening section that rotates a lot of information that comes in there. The other thing is gardeningknowhow.com. That's good. And then sites like, right, the North Texas Garden Association, just your Facebook site, things like you've got out there. It's making sure you've got resources and spaces that you can get quick answers or just share and learn from other people that like to do this thing called gardening. <You know?
laughs> All right, wait a minute. Just what did you say? It's SFA or S? Who makes these home guides?
Homeguides.sfgate.com.
SFgate.
Okay. Yeah, and it's, if you search for things, you'll see it in the, you'll see them come up, but they're short, quick little items. They've got all kinds of information on them, and they cover like magnitudes of things. You just kind of run across them. I had to literally, I started seeing them show up so often in things I was searching. I was like, what is this site? And it's just little quick, you know, 3 or 4 paragraph bases of information that you can get on anything from organic gardening to plants and flowers. And they do cover some things that are non-organic, but it's more from an educational perspective. You know, what is this compared to other things and how does it work? And so it's kind of a really easy read. It's,
are you still there?
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
I kind of lost something there. I heard kind of an easy read and then I got like a blank spot. Well, cool.
Stand over.
And then I just interviewed someone from that Gardening Know-How site, and she is, I can't wait to post her interview. I haven't got to post it yet, but it is just, she is like this wealth of information. She's like, oh yeah, I wrote 1,200 articles on like one topic on like, you know, composting or something, and like, you know, another 1,000 articles on this subject. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And she's like a millennial. She's young. I think she's only like 27 or something crazy. I'm like, you've done all this in your life already? But she just like, anything you mention about any kind of, I was like, I found her because I was like researching what to do with Japanese beetles or something for someone. And she came up, and so then I reached out to her, and then when I talked to her, I was just like, oh my gosh, you're my hero. She just is super knowledgeable about writing gardening blogs and writing like things that really work. She just,
yeah,
she kept,
I would
coming
believe
up
it
over and over. So
her sites are very, very to the point, and that's what you're looking for, because you don't, everybody's so fast paced nowadays. You just want to get your information and move on as quick as you can. Is it going to work? And she's got a good site.
Yeah. Compared to my show notes that are like, if you made a PDF, they're like 26 pages long. I just transcribe what we're talking about and just try to like, you know, put pictures in between to break it up. And I don't know, I always think someday I'm going to go back. Like, I try to highlight the really important parts, and I think someday I'm going to go back and take all the really, really important information. But I don't know, I'm kind of like one of those OCD people where I feel like if I don't put every single thing, I'm like, I don't know, misinterpreting it or something. Like I'm not being, I don't know.
Well, there's a place for it, right?
Yeah.
It's what you're, it's not, it doesn't all have just, it depends on what it is you're doing. You're doing something slightly different, right? You're looking at live discussions and, but even that you probably wheedle down, you know, to what you think is about.
Yep. All right.
Back to that balance thing.
Exactly. How about a favorite reading material? Like, is there a book or a magazine that you really like or a blog that you always end up going to?
You know, for the, I had to really think about that because there's so many things that I just, I'm probably the OCD grabber. You were talking about, you know, I'll grab anything that looks right off a shelf if I'm walking through a store or picking up a magazine. But there's a few little small books that I just have found over the years. I just go back to them consistently. It's like, what is that one thing I thought I read in there? And they're actually really good for the novice gardener if they just need a reminder, or the begin, but probably more so for the beginning gardeners who's really trying to learn a lot about organic gardening or companion planting. One is called The 605 Secrets to a Beautiful, Bountiful Organic Garden.
Oh, I never heard
it's
of that.
It's by Sierra Bright. It's an easy handbook with literally 605 secrets, two, three, four paragraphs per item, and it hits like all kinds of things from baking soda to milk to Epsom salt to the things that people might take for granted that they do that a lot. So like your early gardeners that's starting to really try to understand the different things they can do, there's a lot of good tricks and tips in that handbook, and it's not too long. I think it's only about 200 pages, so you can read through it fairly quickly and get a lot of information. That's from Sierra Bright. And I just, I have it. And then I just find myself every now and then I'll go back to it. I'll think there was something in there I thought I saw, you know, 5 years ago. And so I'll go grab it and go back. Oh yeah, I forgot I could do that. I can try that again. So it's one of those kind of books that you can just, you know, have it on hand if you need it. The other one is, it's kind of similar. It's Companion Planting, The Vegetable Garden Guide by James Paris. It's another really simple one. You can get both of those on Amazon or probably any electronic bookstore. You can have them in your phone. They're not, or you don't have to have a paperback copy of them. And there, it's the same thing. It goes through all of the different companion plants. You know, what plants work well together to inhibit your pests and promote your beneficial insects and, you know, protect your vegetable gardens. What actually makes them taste better and grow stronger. So it's a good one too to kind of have on hand just to be able to, when you're doing your planning at the beginning of the year, to think, okay, if I put this here, can I not plant this with it, right? What am I limited when it comes to planting around certain things? Or if I put these together, you know, these plants are already there. They're my perennials. So I can move these around with them because they make good companions to them. So it's a good guide for that.
Cool. Mike planted garlic for the first time this year, and then somehow he put peas next to him, and then halfway through he's like, you're not supposed to put peas next to garlic, I guess. He said they're not good companion plants, but everything grew well anyway, so.
They, you know, and that's the thing about it is you, like, you're not supposed to put tomatoes with your potatoes either. It's not that they won't grow well together. It's that they call the same hornworm, right? They call the same bug in there. So it's not that they won't grow. They'll grow, but you're just giving like another thing that the hornworm can come after. But that doesn't mean you can't do it. It's just be aware of that's what you're doing. So I made that faux pas this year. I decided I didn't care. I threw my sweet potatoes around my tomatoes, knowing that I would just have to be on the lookout for the little hornworm critters. They might show up and try to eat them. And I've fought them a little bit, but I've been able to control them in there. Quite happy and both growing well. So it's about your space and it's more about knowledge, right? There's some things that you just want to be aware of. You might have a little bit of a problem with, and if you're able to go past that and work through it and it works, then it's right. It's good.
Perfect. So normally I ask like a business advice question, but my listener who asked me about Texas wanted to know about dealing with snakes. Do you ever have to deal with snakes?
You know, it depends on, like, out in West Texas, I had more, and she's in Zone 9, so she probably is more in that area. I had more problems with snakes out there. You don't want to not have snakes, because if it's your, Texas has a lot of rat snakes, and they do exactly what they're called, and that's kind of a good thing. So you can make spaces that might draw them to them, keep them out of your garden if that's what you want, but maybe close enough to do their job. If they've got a rattle on the back of them, then just get away. don't go near them. I'm not sure what kind of snake she's fighting that way, but you can place things such as wood piles, or make sure you don't have those types of things in the vicinity of your garden, but you can deliberately place them outside in places that you want to draw the snakes to. Like basically making a home for them away from where you want them to be. You can do that with a lot of different types of bugs as well, giving a spot for them to draw them away from your garden and give them something to eat, such as fennel instead of dill. But it's the same concept for snakes. You can give them a pile of something that they would naturally nest in to keep them away from where you want them. If you do find them and it's something you're not sure what it is, I definitely wouldn't be touching it, because we do have some dangerous snakes in Texas. But it's I think it's about everything else. Just knowing what kind she's dealing with would help, you know, what kind of snake she's dealing with and how what she's got around her. She might want to look to see what she's got around her and see if she's not got an area that's just inviting them to come right in. Does she have a lot of straw in her garden, which sometimes is really good if you're growing pumpkins, but if she's got a lot of heavy, thick straw across her garden, she may be giving them the perfect place to hide underneath it with a lot of shade and a lot of moisture. So she may want to think of other things to put there to give her the same benefit that's not going to draw that animal.
I don't know. I think the thing is, I don't know if she's just moved to Texas, but she has a young child. I don't know if she just became a mom, but she's worried about the toddler in the garden was her concern. So those are great ideas. Make a place for the snakes to go somewhere so you know where they're at, and keep an eye on the straw. Mike's having a problem with the mice in the straw this year. We have mice everywhere besides the squirrels. Like the squirrels, I'm thinking what we need to do is get a cat. We lost one of our cats this summer, and she was kind of the big mouser, and kind of, I think she helped. And then we have that problem with the fence. But the other thing our squirrels have got besides our broccoli is they ate almost all the apples off of two of our apple trees. They've got all the apples off of the top of the apple trees because of the fence, like you were saying. But
I know.
Yeah.
There has never in existence been a more cuter enemy.
They are. You're so
you
right.
You just want to love them, but you hate them. They just will not leave your, just go away. Take your pretty little tail somewhere else.
And Mike's like, yeah, that one cute little squirrel is really like eight of them. I don't think there's just one out there, too. But yeah, they are pretty cute.
You hear the good, the bad, and the ugly theme song. You know, the da-da-da-da-da-da going off in your head when you look at them.
I know, and I've been it's almost like they speak a language. Like, I was like, I almost thought the squirrel was like speaking, like they, like so many, I was like counting the beats, and I'm like, every time he goes and makes his little chatter sound, it's like for a different number of times. And I'm like, it's like, if he chatters for 13 seconds, is that like the letter G? And if he chatters for 13 seconds, like 15 seconds, is
sending
that like
you more code.
Like,
I will
know, like, teaching
stop,
kindergartners for
eat,
too many
stop
times.
Everything you have.
No, I thought he was
that's
telling,
what he's telling
the
you.
Squirrels, follow me. Look over here. These apples are ready.
I know. And the funny thing is, I had a house part of Texas about 3 years ago. We just moved to our current location within the last 3 years. It was full of trees. There was squirrels everywhere. I mean, everywhere. There would literally be conventions of squirrels, but they would not touch my stuff. They just never touched it. I guess they had so many acorns that they could want nothing more. So I get to this house that has one tree and all this spot of sun, which I wanted because I wanted to have like more spaces for things, and they will not get out of my stuff. You know, I go from 100 squirrels with nobody touching anything to like 5, and that's all they do is eat my stuff.
Goofy squirrels. I know. And then this one is so bold. He keeps going on the porch where we picked all the apples that were left on the one tree and put them in a box so they would just ripen. And he keeps trying to get into the box. And Mike and I just keep like chasing him off the porch. It's so funny. Okay, ready for my final question? Because I know you've got to get to your job.
I do.
If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
Oh, I think that I just recently took a, believe it or not, even old people can be, I just graduated from college, actually, just
you go,
this last
girl.
Year in August. So
well,
I was a little slow on the, uptake there, but it finally happened.
You know? It was your, and, it's your after, time.
But yeah, exactly. But the very last class that I took was biology, and I think it was, it was like the last class because you know, it's like really biology. You just don't want to take that class. But I found, I think, I know, I found more joy, I think, in parts of that class when it came to the environment. And it really is unbelievable the damage that things like pesticides and the smogs and the emissions in our sky that we've caused. I think it was a lot more eye-opening than I had originally, you know, we kind of go about our day and we don't think much about it. But when you really stop and look at how the smog in the air turns into acid rain and it comes down and it ends up in your fish and it ends up in your plants, or the pesticides that you use, how they run off in the drains and they end up in your rivers and your waters, which, right, kills off your bees, or again, the fish that you eat, that the birds eat. It's just such a amazing chain that we have in this world called life. And I think that just opened my eyes, the importance of trying to garden organically, to making sure that you're not just thinking about, you know, what you're creating and growing, but how you're doing it and what that does to the environment around you, so that you can use things and tools that hopefully will keep the world safe at the same time that it's growing beneficial products for you and your family.
Oh, that was perfect. I'm so glad to hear that. And I'm glad to hear they're teaching that in biology classes in school. Can I ask?
Yeah, I was a little shocked, actually, to some of the things. I thought, oh, I thought this is only going to be about frogs and their lungs. But it's Dallas Baptist University.
Awesome. Well, good for you. You know, it's so funny because I was just thinking yesterday when I was walking on a walk up the road about, because I really want to go back and get my master's. And some people are like, oh, you're so old. And I always think,
oh, no, honey, you are never too old.
You know, look at like people who go to college and like develop something and, you know, when they're like 22, you know? So I feel like I'm just ahead of the game because I have all this experience. Why can't I develop something when I'm just like as if I was 22, except for I'm 50 already. So I have all my experience. Plus maybe I have that knowledge. And like, you never know. I always talk about college. You never know who's going to be sitting next to you. That's like, oh, my cousin's sister's best friend is the perfect person for you to meet. And you need to talk to them. And you know, you find out I just think you can never do enough learning. So
absolutely.
I know a woman who went back to school when she was like 52, or I think she graduated when she was 54. So maybe she went back when she was 50 and got her whole bachelor's from scratch and graduated. And actually we went to school at the same time and she taught for like 10, she's already retired from teaching. Meanwhile, like I'm still at the beginning of my teaching career because I don't know. I just keep taking breaks and different things. And I don't know. Anyway, do you just have like an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into their dirt and start their own garden?
Inspirational quote.
Or just something. It
Nope,
doesn't have
no
to be.
pressure there.
It doesn't have to be like a formal quote or something, you know?
I think the best thing is always try something. Don't be afraid to try something different.
Perfect.
Right? Just don't be afraid to combine certain things. I mean, do your research on what's a good companion plant and what's not, but then don't be afraid to try something different. That spot that you thought wasn't good, you might have the perfect shade loving plant that can go there. And it's gardening is a lot like art, right? It's what can you match and what can you pair, because the beauty of it is pretty breathtaking when you get it right. So it's just, I think just as a recap to everything, it's like, don't be afraid to try something different. Don't be afraid to combine things together. You can get beautiful results with your vegetables by throwing them with daisies or and just have fun. That's what it is. It can be frustrating when you're fighting something, but it's fun more than anything, and it's overcoming that. So enjoy it. Do what comes naturally and enjoy what you're doing.
I love that. And I love the way we started out. You were talking about your very first garden was just a complete bomb, but yet you still have all this passion and just kept going. So I think that will really inspire people. Well, thanks so much for talking with me this morning, and enjoy New York and check out the town and everything. And I'll see you on Facebook.
All right. Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And it will link right to the show notes and all that we've talked about on today's show. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow local.